This is a previously recorded episode.
The show is broadcasting live from the Podcast Detroit studios in Royal Oak, Michigan. For more information about the show or our network, please visit www.podcastdetroit.com.
Computer says yes.
I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew.
Computer says no.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Hello, I'm Billy Strutter, and you're listening to The Scoop, Episode 5, coming from Podcast Detroit Studios. And this week, we are joined by Caroline Dobbins, the Communication and Engagement Manager at Challenge Detroit.
Hi there, how are you?
Good, how about yourself?
Doing well.
Thanks for coming in.
I'm excited to be here.
I heard you were on vacation.
I was on vacation. I feel...
What? Did I not? I lost something. But I don't know what. You still there?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Sorry.
I'm just getting old, dude. I don't know. I was like, I don't know.
You have your headphones on over your head.
Yes, that's probably what the issue is. Hey, so there's like this great big sporting event going on right now.
I think I know what that one is. I think it's the Olympics.
Is it the Olympics?
That's what I hear. That's
what you hear?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's this interesting thing with social media and the Olympics right now. Apparently, the Olympics are not public domain. So what that means is that if you're a brand, you could potentially get sued if you talk about the Olympics on social media. You can't use any of the stuff, any of the things, any of the hashtags, no GIFs.
Wow.
Yeah.
That seems wrong on a lot of different levels. Like, doesn't the Olympics want everyone to share what's happening?
You would think so. I mean, when you look at the statistics for like social media, and we'll just take Twitter, for example, and how people were tweeting during the Super Bowl, there something like 16 million people were reached because of tweets that came through. But it just seems like such a simple thing to allow brands. But unless you're a sponsor and you've paid money, you are not allowed to do anything with the Olympic at all.
Wow.
And so let's see. It says the United States Olympic Committee has warned all businesses that are not Olympic sponsors not to post on social media. So you can't create social media posts that are Olympic themed, that feature Olympic trademarks, that contain games imagery, or even congratulate Olympic performance.
You can't even, like, even if the person is from your hometown,
no,
this brand's hometown, you can't even say congratulations.
Absolutely not. Unless you want to get sued.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is ridiculous.
It's absolutely nuts. Let's see. So the other thing that came in, to make matters worse, even businesses that are sponsoring athletes are subject to the same rules. So if they are not also sponsors of the games themselves, so a business that's sponsoring an athlete cannot on social media wish the athlete good luck or congratulate him or her if they win medals. I know. The look on your face, I wish if we had video. It's so perfect.
I'm just thinking, like, okay, so I'm a swimmer, and I'm thinking if Speedo is sponsoring Michael Phelps, but they're not a sponsor of the games, then they can't post anything about the athlete that they are paying money
to. That is correct. Ding, ding, ding. This is very true.
Wow.
It's, you know, and if you go to the Olympic.org, it's... So the social and digital media guidelines are 6 pages long.
When's the last time anyone read anything that's 6 pages long?
I don't know.
Besides,
but I'm
a novel.
I believe that if you don't want to get sued, you probably need to have this memorized if you are a social media manager or involved in managing social at all and you want to talk about the Olympics.
Well, I guess I have my evening reading then, don't I?
There you go. So some other things that are going on. I won't bore you anymore about the Olympics. Well, a little bit more. So have you watched the Olympics at all?
I watched a bit of the opening ceremonies, but being on vacation, I was very unplugged, which was very nice. And I don't have like TV at home.
Oh, So how do you like keep up with what's going on in the world?
I just
I'm just kidding.
I use that thing called my phone and the watch internet. A lot of the interwebs. So I haven't. I'm sure I will catch some. But I would normally be glued to the TV because I love the Olympics.
Right.
But yeah, this year it isn't in the schedule right now.
Yeah, can you stream it?
I'm not sure.
Well, you know, that brings me to the point I wanted to bring up about the Olympics. So there have been some complaints because NBC, and they've been doing this over the last few years where they've sort of packaged, when I say the last few years, every time the Olympics happens.
Yeah, every 4 years.
Right. They have been sort of prepackaging the Olympics. And so it's been really difficult this year for people to find live events. Or they have lots of these sort of montage stories where they want you to care about the athletes and where they came from, what they've gone through. And so they said that the reason why they've done this is because more women are watching the Olympics than men. And so they wanted to make sure that they had entertainment for them, that it's sort of like...
because women don't like sports?
That's essentially what they're saying, I guess. They're saying that 53% of Teen USA is female. So that's the likelihood awesome. That more women are going to win medals than men.
Yes.
I mean, if we're doing the math correctly. But, you know, they're just saying that the argument is that that they feel like because there are more women that are interacting, they want to package it in a way in which they enjoy women, enjoy television. So it's part drama. It's part, reality television. But I feel like they're missing something.
Well, it's the Olympics. And the main point of the Olympics is to watch the athletes that are best in their sport. And so I imagine, even though I do enjoy learning about the athletes and where they've come from and where they hope to go after the Olympics, I still want to see the U.S. kick butt.
Right.
And like win some hardware.
And see it as it's happening.
Yeah.
Not like on a time delay, not the next day later, not here's 20 minutes of the thing or here's just a little snippet. You want to watch it as it's happening because that's part of the excitement of watching sports.
Absolutely.
The argument that was in the article was that, you know, when you're watching, they don't do it for football and they really don't do it for any other sports. But somehow they feel like because they're trying to market to women that they need to somehow package it other than as a sporting event.
And that seems backwards.
It does. And they're certainly missing out on a younger audience because that's not, you know, if you're going to watch sports and you're not getting sports, then what interest is there going to be in the Olympics?
Right. I'm just thinking about like the things that I would be most compelled to see. And I'm bummed that I missed this particular race, but Katie Ledecky, who I think is 19, she's a swimmer. She's a phenom. She's amazing. Broke her own world record by like multiple seconds, which in swimming is completely unheard
of. Yeah, that was crazy.
And blew the competition away. If I had been seeing that live, I'd have been going crazy.
Right. Cheering for the, you're going to be yelling at the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like that adrenaline is just as enjoyable, if not more so, than watching experiences.
Yeah,
some
sorry,
of
that's just me. That's because I don't know how to use the internet.
So just experiencing, like hearing Katie's story and where she came from, that's interesting. But I sure as heck want to see her like live kick some serious butt.
You know, have you ever, sometimes I've watched the Olympics where in the middle of something that's going on, they'll cut away to do one of those stories in the middle of the event. I'm like, what are you doing?
Right.
I really just want to watch what's going on with the sports.
Yeah. And it would be different, I feel like, if this happened every week, maybe. But it's the Olympics. It happens. The Summer Olympics happen every 4 years. These people are likely to not compete at the Olympics ever again. They're the outliers that are there year after year after year. But this is their shot.
Yeah. And that's the important part. So I'm going to stick with the Olympics for a little bit.
Sweet.
And I'm going to talk about Leslie Jones from Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. She's also on the Ghostbusters. And so apparently she was tweeting commentary about the games. And the internet was loving every bit of it. And NBC, they noticed and invited her to come to the Olympics and be a commentator.
That's awesome.
And that, to me, that's just so amazing that someone can just, I'm chilling at home, I'm just watching the Olympics, and I'm going to do my thing. And next thing you know, they're flying down to Rio, and they're going to be a commentator on NBC.
I knew I should have been tweeting more.
You know what? Don't stop dreaming.
Yeah.
Right?
Next, well, 2020.
20, yes.
Yeah. Going to Tokyo. Years,
going I to think. Tokyo. Is it Tokyo?
I think it is.
I don't know. I need to stay up on these things.
Don't quote me.
Don't quote you?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Now I'm second guessing.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
All right. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it
we'll
out.
We'll do a Google search later. We had some interesting things going on in Detroit.
Yeah.
Donald Trump was in town.
He was.
And Twitter was going crazy, as well as Facebook. And it's so the thing that's really interesting, too, is that people are still tweeting about the visit. Looks like he had 14 hecklers. Only 14.
Only 14.
And the thing that we were talking about prior to the show, we had this conversation about heckling and the power of media and social. It seems like there's a lot more heckling, although I can't say that for sure because I can't say like back in my day because my day is
today.
Pretty much now.
Yeah.
But I just wonder, you know, what that was like. You know, you go back, 40 years and yes, it's Tokyo. See,
sweet.
This is why you have producers, because they can look those things up for you.
Awesome.
Going back to Donald Trump. Sorry, that was just a brief. We had to know.
You just have to know.
You have
sometimes.
To know.
And that's why we have Google.
Yes. All right. Always. The show just always goes off the rails like that.
It's okay.
Just I'm squirrel. Ah. What's that? This one.
Shiny.
But yeah. So the question, I guess, for you is, you know, does it seem like people are more likely to go in and heckle for the attention because they know that they're going to be on television or someone's going to broadcast it on Facebook Live or catch video? What are your thoughts on that?
I think we as a society put a lot of weight in social media. And we often say things via social media that we wouldn't ever say to someone in person. That feels a little like it's a safer place apparently, but it's not. I think with the heckling in relation to political campaigns and that type of stuff, I think the people who were there probably have a message that they feel very, very passionate about. And they felt like that was their avenue to do that. If we didn't have social media, would we have had 14? We don't know that. There may have been half as many people. There may have been one or two in the crowd that just got through. But I imagine there's some motive in there for those 14 people that are trying to get their message across. Like, oh, if I get into this big event, somebody's going to tell someone about it. And it's going to go crazy.
Yeah. I guess there was an organization that took responsibility for it. And I wonder, you know, so you now have organizations getting hecklers together to go into an event for the sole purpose of disrupting that event. Is there a lack of respect there? In, you know, when you think about, it doesn't matter whether it's, if you're red or you're blue, the idea that people will organize just for the sole purpose of going around to events to disrupt and not allow someone to at least give their speech. I mean, you can certainly disagree with someone, but every few minutes interrupting, heckling, I don't know if I'm a big fan of that.
I am not a big fan. I think it is very disrespectful. I was at an event probably 6 months or so ago in Detroit at Wayne State. And there were a lot of individuals who had a lot to say to the people that were there, to the public officials that were at the event. to the point that the organization canceled the event because it wasn't, it was no longer productive.
Right.
And I have never felt so embarrassed for people I didn't even know. And so like moved by the fact that this was happening in a place that was my first experience in a place that I was. And I just felt like grimy afterwards. Mm-hmm. I was like, I can't believe people are doing this. And I understand that you feel so passionate about it. And kudos to you for feeling that passionate about it and knowing that that's important to you. But that is not the avenue to do it.
It seems like we have so many other productive ways of, you know, we live in a country where we have, you know, freedom of speech. We, everyone has a voice and has an avenue in which, or an outlet to be able to reach people, whether it be social, whether it's email, whether it's, you know, getting on the news. But yeah, I was thinking about an event that I went to. It was a State of the City event. I won't say which city. But the hard part was that we had people at that event, and it wasn't one that I was covering. It wasn't for a client or anything like that. But they were so the protesters were interrupting the speech, talking about the Flint water crisis. And I'm like, but this is not Flint. This is a completely different city. That's, you know, we're several hours. We're a few miles away from Flint. And so I'm not understanding the productivity of that. And so, yeah, I don't know. I struggle with it.
Yeah, it's hard to be in that environment where it's happening. It's also hard for me to justify those actions because it does not feel productive.
Awesome. Well, thank you for the insights. Mm-hmm. You know what we forgot to do? We forgot to do the Urban Dictionary word of the day.
Ugh. I can't believe
so,
it.
So like we're 20 minutes in and we, you know, so we're still going to do the battle figure out how many times we can get that word in. But so the Urban Dictionary word of the day is going to be delish.
Delish.
Yes.
Can I have you use it in a sentence?
this tastes delish. Yum. That steak was delish. Or, hey, Billy. This turkey is delish. Perfect. There are lots of different ways that we can use. Or that guy, girl, is so delish.
Oh.
So, I don't know. I mean, you can try to use it in context or you can just throw it in randomly.
Random.
So some other things, some really cool things going on in social media this week. Instagram rolled out 24-hour stories. And have you had a chance to play with that?
Just briefly. It feels very similar to another social platform.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you care to share the name of that platform?
It kind of feels like Snapchat.
It very much feels like Snapchat. And I don't think Facebook was being shy about that at all. You know, when they rolled this out. So, yeah. So Instagram stories. And so you can share photos, videos. They'll disappear within 24 hours. And so it should be rolled out for most people by now. And then the other thing that you can do is you can add text, there are drawing tools, you can share it with other people, but, I don't know, is it something, I know you only played with it briefly. Do you currently use Snapchat now?
Occasionally. I don't use stories all that often in general on Snapchat. It's just not something that I've ever really gotten into. And I think it wasn't happening while I was in school. And then I was trying to like be a professional. and so I was like, this Snapchat thing, I don't know about that. So I'm not an avid user of Snapchat. And I thinking about Instagram stories, I'm not feeling super compelled to use Instagram stories either. But I'm just thinking like, can we just have one platform that does everything? Tired of checking them all.
Yeah, it does get a little tiresome trying to go from Instagram to Snapchat to Facebook to Twitter to LinkedIn to YouTube. What am I missing?
Pinterest.
Yeah. I mean, there are quite a few. I mean, I think there's over 800. I'm not even getting this right, but there are a ton of social networks, and depending on what country you're in, mm-hmm. you could have a different one, and then you throw the messaging apps on top of that.
Right.
It's never ending.
Yeah, you can consistently on my I consistently have on my iPhone so many red numbers. Like
yeah.
So many notifications. I'm kind of immune to it now.
Yeah. You don't just turn them off. You just ignore them.
There are some apps where I don't let Facebook give me notifications.
Yeah. Because it'd kill your
battery.
It's
too many. Too many. I have enough in my like unread emails section of my phone, which is really embarrassing.
1,276 unread emails.
Way more than that.
Really?
We won't talk about that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a lot.
No judgment. This is a no judgment zone. But I'm sure within those emails, there's got to be something that's so delish.
Absolutely. I subscribe to a lot of food blogs, and there's always delish content coming out of those.
Well done. So, let's
one
see.
For one.
One for one. So we're one for one. So Twitter announced a new delish Twitter ads manager. So they're rolling out a new ad manager because one of the things that, you know, for those that manage Twitter ads is that one of the complaints was that the interface was really sort of weird and bulky and just not user. It wasn't intuitive. And so it's pretty cool to see that they're going to be rolling out a new. So it's in public beta right now, should be rolling out in a few months here. And then LinkedIn introduced videos from LinkedIn influencers, which is a new thing. They're 30-second videos. And they only sent it out to a handful of people. I think it was about 500 influencers that they invited to test it out. But the idea is that, you know, we see video playing a large role in social media today. And so this is just another way for LinkedIn to take advantage of that. You know, so you can do it 30 seconds at a time, right? So a little snippet.
Yeah, and that's about four times our average attention span as humans these days.
It seems that like, way, doesn't it?
Yeah. Somebody told me the other day that we have an attention span of about 8 seconds.
That's it?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's but mostly when we're looking at our phones.
Moving on.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That was about eight
yep.
seconds.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. See, you know you're doing well when you get a giggle from the producer. Another news thing, as we were talking about Snapchat. So NBC, it sounds like they're going to be rolling out some content. So they're going to be jumping on Snapchat with original content from some of their shows. So just
like behind the scenes,
sort of behind the scenes or, you know, so do you watch The Walking Dead?
I'm really not a zombies fan. Oh. I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Humans,
I know.
So delish.
Yes, that's what all the zombies
That's
say.
What the zombies that's, are thinking
yes,
as they're walking.
They love eating delish humans.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so with that, on The Walking Dead, they produce content strictly for the web. So you may be watching the show, and then there's content that is different than the show, but related on the web. And so that's what NBC is looking to do with their this new, as they move to Snapchat. So it may be, so you want to know how they ended up getting to this spot if they're like in trouble. So you can go to Snapchat and you can see this is how it happened. So it's just a way for as people consume media on multiple screens. So you're watching on TV and now you're watching on your phone and you can experience it from two different ways.
Yeah.
More of an interactive type show.
So often I am watching TV. Right now it's Netflix because mm-hmm. I don't have a TV other than my Netflix, but also being on my phone and the amount of time I spend on the screen seems ridiculous, but that's the way we function.
How much time do you spend, do you think?
Oh, I don't even.
Have you ever calculated your screen time?
I haven't. I mean, I spend all day in front of my laptop for work, and part of my work is social media, so I have to kind of stay on top of that. Those things, and it's easy to get stuck in the scrolling of
right.
whatever's going on. And gosh, yeah, I don't want to calculate my screen time.
Yeah, it's pretty scary when you think about it.
It would be
pretty
scary.
Yeah. Do you ever? So one of the things I notice as it gets towards the end of the day is that my vision starts to get I don't wear glasses, but my vision starts to get a little bit blurry from all of the screen time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why can't I see anything right now?
Yep. I have really enjoyed on my iPhone the the nighttime screen.
The yellowish.
Yeah, the yellowish screen. It's supposed to, like, the blue light's supposed to keep you up. And the yellow is supposed to not be so.
Sorry.
The yellow color is supposed to not keep you up, apparently. Yeah.
Have you tested that? Have you woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning, turned on your iPhone with the yellow screen to see if it...
It doesn't necessarily... Maybe it puts me back to sleep sooner.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It
could be the lullaby music that you're playing.
Embarrassingly enough, when I do wake up in the middle of the night, I, like, immediately pull out my phone because I know whatever I'm going to scroll through is probably going to put me to sleep.
Right.
Like, there's just nothing going on at 3 a.m. that I actually care about.
This is true. I am surprised at the number of friends that are still awake at 3 o'clock in the morning when I wake up.
Yeah, I'm not ever purposely awake at 3 a.m.
I try not to be. Hey, guess what?
What?
Facebook just changed its algorithm, and you won't believe what this marketer said next. It's so delish. No. So what Facebook seriously changed their algorithm to punish clickbait headlines like that. Right? So do you remember there was a period of time where you saw a bunch of headlines that were just like that,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, President Obama was listening to Eminem and you'll never guess what happened next. And so that's one of the and so those clickbait headlines, brilliant for getting people to click, but horrible for, you know, nobody wants to see that all the time. Right.
Right.
I mean, so they're making that less prevalent, and they're also giving less. So if you or a page, it's harder for you to get in front of people. And I was just scrolling through Facebook before we started today, and I noticed I was seeing more stuff from friends than I was seeing from brands.
Interesting. And I'm going to have to go back and look at that now.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out and see if you see a difference in the fact that you're seeing more content from friends than brands.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, so, that's the whole purpose,
like,
right?
Yeah, Facebook was a way to keep up with my friends.
Right.
And I, of course, use it as a way to stay up to date on what brands that I love are doing.
Right.
But, yeah, I just was feeling very inundated with
too much brand stuff.
Articles.
Right.
And it's a little scary, like the ads you get. I'm like, I just looked at that kitchen utensil,
right,
and now there's an ad for it right there.
But it's so effective.
It is so effective. But it's frightening sometimes.
Yeah, a little bit. You know what? I hear that a lot when we were out and about. It's that, wow, that's really spooky. And I'm like, well, I mean, if you look at it from a marketer standpoint, or even if you step back and don't think of it as like we're actually tracking you, but more that we're providing you with something that you're actually interested in. And because we know more about you, we don't necessarily know your name, but we know more about you. We can serve up ads that are, you know, instead of if you hate peanut butter, we're not going to serve you up an ad about peanut butter, right?
And right.
So it's just more relevant.
But peanut butter is so delicious.
It is. Oh, wow. I don't even know what the score is. We're going to have to listen back.
I think we might be even.
Three to one? All right. No, I think it may be 3-2, but I just give up. So we're going to just take a break. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk to Caroline about her day-to-day and what Challenge Detroit does. So we'll be back in a few minutes.
Right.
And we're back with episode 5 of The Scoop. I'm Billy Strutter, joined by Caroline Dobbins, who is the Communications and Engagement Manager for Challenge Detroit.
Thanks so much. I mean, so excited to be here.
Are you?
Yes.
It's super delish to have you here. And I don't think that's the right context.
Yeah.
But we're just...
Word of the day.
I'm trying to win the challenge. So tell me about Challenge Detroit and what you guys do.
Challenge Detroit is a year-long fellowship program in the city of Detroit. We bring about 30 individuals to our program every year. They work for what we call a host company Monday through Thursday. And those companies are big organizations like General Motors, Chrysler, DTE Energy, and other smaller organizations, both in the city and in the suburbs, nonprofit, for-profit, doing a variety of jobs. And then on Fridays, we come together and do what we call nonprofit impact projects. So we spend about 5 weeks with a single Detroit nonprofit helping them further their mission, think creatively about their problem that they're facing. Might be marketing a new service that they're providing, or helping them find funders, a whole variety of things. And so we do about 5 to 6 of those every year. And our fellows do leadership development, service, social events in the city, really as a way to immerse these individuals in the city of Detroit, help them realize that it is a place that they can grow their career, have an impact, and have a lot of fun.
That's cool. So the fellows come from where?
The fellows come from all over. We have native Detroiters in our program. We have Metro Detroiters that may have gone to Michigan or Michigan State or Grand Valley for school and are looking to kind of be close to home but still want to be in that metropolitan area. And then we have people from all over the country. One of our fellows from our outgoing class, year 4, she's from Arizona. We have another fellow who moved to Detroit from North Carolina. We've had fellows from as far as California. So they really come from all over, and for a variety of reasons. Some just have Detroit has piqued their interest in some way. Some happen to find us on the internet and think, gosh, that's really cool. I should try to do that. Other people are looking for an opportunity to give back and see Challenge Detroit as a way to do that. So we have people from all over, and it's so cool to have them all in the same room.
Nice. Now, when you guys when you get together on Fridays and you're doing your impact projects, do you guys serve them delicious food? Oh, that doesn't count because I didn't say delish, did I?
No, that doesn't count. We try to serve exceptionally delish food to our fellows from local Detroit small businesses. But our nonprofits, we know they're always working on a very, very small budget. So we don't usually ask them to provide us food.
Nice. And so, I mean, when we're thinking about, I love the idea that you guys are ordering from local Detroit businesses. And so I imagine that there is an economic impact to the work that you guys are doing. Is there a place that people can find the impact of the work that you've done with the Challenge Fellows?
Absolutely. We are working on putting more and more of this information on our website. ChallengeDetroit.org is where you can find a lot of information about us. You can learn about our history, all of our classes, years 1 through 4. Read blogs from the fellows themselves about their year as a Challenge Detroit fellow. And we are quickly approaching our 5th year. We're very excited to be celebrating. Thank you. We'll be celebrating our 5-year anniversary, which feels very special for us as a very small team. I don't think when our 2 founders came up with this that they thought it would last 5 years. You'd never really know.
Right.
So we're very excited to be coming to the 5-year mark, and we'll spend the next year really, really telling that story about the impact that we've made in the last 5 years and how we've seen Detroit evolve and the role that we've played in that.
Yeah. I remember seeing Challenge Detroit on Twitter when you guys were first getting started. And so it's really cool to see how you've grown and sort of the impact that you have. When a fellow comes in and works for a company, what kind of positions are they working in?
They are working in a variety of positions. So some of our fellows are working, in kind of the placemaking, economic development sector of an organization. Others are working in HR. Some are working in public affairs. Some are working in community engagement, public relations. We have a few fellows who are working in the finance department. It depends.
It's all over the board.
Yeah. With our host companies, they either come to us and say, you hire great talent and we want a great and talented person. So we will find a spot for them in our organization. Or a company comes to us and says, we want to fill this role with a fellow from your organization. So we come at it in 2 different directions, and our recruitment reflects that. But we always get amazingly talented individuals that are really excited to be in the program.
Nice. I was looking at the 3 years of impact on your website. So from 2012 to 2015, And it so there was a stat where 10 fellows have started their own ventures in Detroit. That's pretty amazing. And how many of the fellows who come from other parts of the country, because it looks like 44% of the fellows were from outside of Michigan, how many of those end up staying after they go through this program?
Yeah, we have seen following their fellowship year. So in that first year that they have finished Challenge Detroit, they may be staying at their host company, they may have found a new job. We've seen that about 80%, if not more, of our fellows stay in that first year. Now, our class that may have finished in 2013, those individuals have made several career moves. Lots of them are still in the area, but some have headed back to graduate school, and they may have had significant others that have taken them to other places of the country, which we're always sad to see that. But as an alum, both an alumni of the program and a staff member of the program or of the organization, it's really important for us to have individuals leave Detroit and tell that positive
story. Tell the story. They're spreading
their
experience. The message. Yeah.
And that's so much of the work that we do is telling a very balanced story of Detroit and that it isn't all amazing, but it isn't all terrible either.
Right.
And so even though we are always sad to see alumni fellows head off on their next adventure, we do know that it's best for them and that they had a positive experience in the program and will carry that excitement with them.
I'm sure it has to be a proud moment to know that part of their experience in their journey towards, you know, just in their professional career came through their experience of being in Detroit and being part of Challenge Detroit.
Absolutely.
And it's like go and fly.
Yeah. And we love when they continue to fly and soar in Detroit and start a nonprofit or start their own venture or continue with their host companies and continue to have that relationship. But we do understand that Detroit isn't always for everyone all the time, and they might leave and they might come back. And we would welcome them with open arms.
Yeah. Do you have any stories of where a fellow has come through and they had some reservations about the city of Detroit based on what they heard prior to coming into the city? And then by the time they came through, realized they've just completely fallen in love.
I think that's probably my story.
Okay.
Actually.
Well, tell me about that.
Yeah. So I was a fellow in our first year, 2012-2013, fresh out of college. Wasn't really sure what I wanted to be doing, but some of the host companies on the Challenge Detroit website were companies that I was also trying to get in with. So I was like, I'm going to show them. I'm going to get into this program, and then they're going to want to hire me.
Right.
That didn't actually happen that way. But I wasn't sure what I was getting into. And I had experienced Detroit through sporting events, but that was really it. And I lived far enough away, about an hour and a half directly west in a tiny town, that I wasn't familiar with what was happening in the city or what had happened to the city. And so I kind of was just thinking like, well, we'll try it. I don't know what it's going to end up being like. And there were certainly reservations. I started the summer before I joined the program. I started reading up on things. I was like, gosh, I don't really know what I'm getting into. Mm-hmm. This is a little unnerving almost, but also very exciting. And it's been 4 years now, and I still live in the city, and I love it, and I work in the city and love what I do, and really haven't looked for a job anyplace else since then. I can't really imagine leaving right now.
What was it that made you fall in love with Detroit?
I just feel like there's a lot of very genuine people in Detroit. I feel like what you do matters in the city, no matter how big or how small it is. I can be a person walking down the sidewalk and decide to pick up a piece of trash, and that is helpful. Whereas in larger cities, that doesn't really make a dent, it feels like. And you just kind of get swallowed up in larger cities, we're in Detroit, if you meet enough people and you do enough good work, people are going to know who you are. And that's an exciting place to be as a fairly new professional in my career.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about Detroit for sure. Talk to me about, well, one, thank you for sharing your story. I think that's pretty amazing. But talk to me about your, you know, if you are handling communications and engagement, I imagine that means that you're doing a little bit of social media.
A little bit.
What role, well, number one, what channels are you guys using?
We primarily use Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Okay. And how impactful have those channels been for you in recruiting and keeping people aware about what you're doing throughout the year?
They have been so helpful. Nonprofits work on little to no budget, and social media allows us to reach a lot of people without spending money. If we spend money, it's very little money, and it's around very key times in our cycle. So we use social media to tell our story all the time. Weekly, we do fellow spotlights of our current fellows. So we like to feature both the individual and their host company to provide a little bit of thanks and recognition to our host company partners, as well as to our fellows who are putting in a lot of work into the program for the year. So we post those on all of our social media outlets. During our recruitment process, we use social media a lot. We are consistently sharing that recruitment is happening. We are messaging universities, career centers, student groups about our program and that it's accepting applications and we're looking for people that have these skills and want to make an impact. And we also use it as a tool to help us kind of narrow down our pool of candidates. We do a fun little Facebook vote. In the middle of the process, everyone who applies is required to post a video, a 1 minute video mm-hmm. about why they want to be in Challenge Detroit, which is so much fun to watch. And so we post the top, 140 applicants, 150 applicants on our Facebook platform, and they get to spread their message about why they want to be in Challenge Detroit for a week. And it's not 100% of who gets into the finals, but it's fun for us to see how much they're willing to share about their experience, because we ask them to do that a lot during their year as a fellow.
Right. Yeah, I imagine you get some pretty creative videos coming through.
Very creative videos and very creative sharing mechanisms. It's always like, oh, where did Challenge Detroit get tagged today? My phone is always freaking out during recruitment with social media.
What about fundraising? Is that something that you guys do via social media, or
we haven't done much fundraising on social media.
That was such a horrible question. I didn't even finish. I was like, is it?
We haven't done, I don't think we've really done any fundraising on social media. We have amazing host company partners. Not to say that we wouldn't love to have more partners, more supporters, but it doesn't feel like our style, I don't think, right now. I think if we did it the right way, and I'm not even sure what the right way is, but I think we could probably figure out some creative ways to do it. We just haven't done it yet.
Yeah. Well, and that's the great thing about having the partners that you do. So as a nonprofit, right, there are a bunch of amazing tools that are available through various platforms. So Google gives the $10,000 per month, the mm-hmm. grant for online advertising. And I think Facebook has a donate button. And then there's also a new thing that they rolled out. Maybe it's not new, but it's a fundraiser campaign that you can run via Facebook. Do you guys take advantage of some of those tools?
We have looked into taking advantage of some of those tools. Part of, I think, our issue struggle, I don't know what to call it, is we're a team of three.
Yeah.
And we do a lot.
You wear a lot of hats.
We wear a lot of hats. And so sometimes we find out about these things in the 23rd hour, and it feels, and we always want to honor our brand and put out the best possible content we can. And so when we learn about something in the 23rd hour, we don't always feel like we can do that. And so it hasn't come to fruition yet. That doesn't mean that we won't.
Right.
And I think, I know there are more ways that we can be taking advantage of that. And it's just one of those things that sometimes gets put on the back burner,
yeah,
because we're trying to get food and find locations.
Right. Yeah, there's so many other things to do.
Yeah.
Right. That is a challenge that I think lots of nonprofits have,
mm-hmm,
right? Because you're running lean and you're trying, as a nonprofit, I mean, that's the whole point, right? Is that you're trying to be good stewards of your budget and make sure that most of the money is going towards running the program. And so when it comes to doing all of these extra things, it's like, well, they're, you know, you're going through your checklist and like, oh, well, this is more important. This is more important. I'll get to that when I have time. Yeah, I can certainly see how that can be a challenge. So even managing Facebook and Twitter. So for you, is the busy time when it, you know, the fellows are applying? What's the busy time of year for you?
I would say our busiest time, especially in relation to social media, is our recruitment period. So early in the year, February to April, May. But we're constantly having to think a couple months ahead because we know that the next event is coming, or the next recruitment cycle is coming, or the next class of fellows is coming. So it's just, being that it's only a year program, a year goes by so fast, it seems like, in our world. It's, you blink and yeah, we're halfway through and you're like, what happened?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Like, you're so busy and you're like, oh, wow, it's over.
Yeah. And our fellows feel the same way too, because we really put them through the ringer. They do a lot of work, all very exciting work, but they do a lot of work in their 52 weeks with us. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, what are you guys looking for in a challenge fellow?
Mostly in a challenge fellow, we are looking for an entrepreneurial spirit. That doesn't mean that you want to start your own business. That means that you are willing to approach a problem in a unique way. We want great listeners, people who are willing to take a bit of a risk, and understand that their year in Challenge Detroit might not be 100% what they expected, but it will often exceed their expectations,
right,
in ways that they would have never known. And we want people who are willing to put in the work.
Yeah.
I've said it a lot. We work a lot.
You work a lot.
Yeah. And not to scare anyone away, it's an amazing experience.
Yeah, but you've got to come away from that with this experience of, you know, I didn't think I could do it, but I did.
Absolutely. It's so often people say it feels like I have two full-time jobs, because you are so dedicated to what you're doing with your nonprofit partners on Fridays, and you are so dedicated to your host company job that you want to perform 100% at both, because yeah, you know that it's so important. And we recruit year after year the people who go above and beyond and are willing to put in that extra time and do the 9 to 5 and then the 5 to 9.
Right.
And it's just a lot of fun.
Looks like, you know, when you look through at some of the work that you guys have done, I just attended an event. Was it 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
It's been 2 weeks.
Crazy.
You know, where you were showcasing the nonprofit partners that you guys worked with. And it was just really cool to see. Not only are they working for a company, but then the effort that they put in for this project. And so, I mean, kudos to you at Challenge Detroit for all you do, for supporting this region, but bringing people in to fall in love with Detroit the same way that I did when I moved here, you know, 16. I think it's maybe longer than that now. But I mean, in the same way that you did when you went through Challenge Detroit yourself.
Yeah, it is amazing work. And I think sometimes we get so caught up in the day to day and we forget to step back and realize that we are having an impact.
Yeah.
And that we are having a really awesome experience. But yeah, events like the ones you attended just really remind us that we have amazingly talented individuals as fellows, but that we also do really awesome work.
That's cool. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show. I can't believe the time has gone by.
It was
already.
Delish.
Yeah. Oh, see, I'm pretty sure that I've lost this, but certainly a delish episode. Where can people find you?
You can find me personally on Twitter at CN Dobbins. You can find us Challenge Detroit on Twitter at Challenge DET. Follow us on Instagram at Challenge Detroit. And same with Facebook. We're at Challenge Detroit.
Fair enough. Any last words?
I don't think so. This has been fun.
This is
my first podcast.
Is it
ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you did great.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is episode 5 of The Scoop, and we will catch up with you next week. Bye-bye.
This is a previously recorded episode.